Vituity is making healthcare delivery responsive, accessible, and equitable by bringing care to the patient. Join Vituity in our commitment to delivering health in place. Learn more at Vituity.com.
This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by a brilliant physician leader. We're joined today by John Varbereau. John is the Chief Medical Officer at Bergen-Newbridge Medical Center. Dr. Varbereau is going to talk to us about his career advice for leaders, the transition to leadership, and a lot more. Dr. Varbereau, can you take a moment, introduce yourself, and tell us a little bit about Bergen County and Bergen-Newbridge Medical Center?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. As you said, my name is Dr. John Varbereau. By training, I'm an internal medicine physician, and I was one of the early hospitalists. I ended up in hospitals because it was kind of a new thing at the time, and I was coming out of residency, didn't quite know what I wanted to do. Hospitalist sounded interesting, so I took a position in that, and ended up being my life's work. I initially was just trying to figure out what kind of fellowship I wanted to do, and ended up really loving it and being kind of part of that early on. And because I was, I ended up creating a lot of new things, and that kind of became my pathway. Initially, I was more interested in medical education, so I was at big academic centers, and I went to a few of them and helped either start up or redesign or add on a lot to a bunch of different hospitalist programs. And then I was involved in starting up a residency program and then starting up a medical school. And in doing that, realized that I was kind of going into the leadership path. And quite frankly, I was getting frustrated with leaders in the field. So I ended up moving up into leadership, eventually leading me here to Bergen-Newbridge Medical Center in January of 2018, where I've been the chief medical officer and eventually became the chief medical advisor to the entire county. Bergen County, New Jersey is the largest county in New Jersey. It's about 1 million people. So it's not the largest county by far in the country, but it is larger by population than about 4 or 5 states, I think. We are the public hospital here in Bergen County. There are 4 other large hospitals or systems here in the area. So there's a lot of healthcare available. And we're about 20 miles as the crow flies from New York City and all of the big famous medical centers there as well. So there's a lot of competition in the area. Bergen-Newbridge, when we got here, there was a major leadership change about 5 years ago. It really had a bad reputation, for lack of a better term. There were a lot of gems here and pearls, but nobody knew about them. And there were a lot of things kind of clouding that. So it was kind of the hospital people didn't want to come to. And the goal here was really to rebuild it and rebuild the reputation and build up high quality of care here so that people would want to come here, not just only if they had to come here. And that was kind of the goal. And we've seen a lot of change here in these 5 years, particularly during the pandemic, where we became known as a place people want to go. And we partnered with the county on a lot of public health initiatives here in the area, doing a lot of outreach, a lot of both things for the entire community, and also reaching out specifically to address healthcare disparities and just provide good healthcare for the county in general. And now we're in a position that's kind of interesting because we're one of the places that actually did decently during the pandemic. We're not actually in the financial distress you're hearing a lot of other medical centers in, and we're trying to now leverage that into a kind of new identity for the facility. So that was a long description, so we can go in different directions.
But it's actually a magnificent description. There's 2 things I want to sort of take off on and talk about those first. First, you said something brilliant about sort of a safety net hospital or hospital hospital or whatever. It's this concept of moving from a place that people need to go to people want to go to, that they want to go there. And I think that's a brilliant summation of where a great safety net hospital wants to be. Yes, you might have to go here because of economics, but we want this to be such a great place that you want to go here. The second thing, and I love that way to look at things. The second thing you mentioned was this career as a hospitalist. Yes, there's more and more shortages of doctors nationally. I mean, you see wait times are way up to get into doctors. More and more systems are focused on how long does it take to get into a primary care physician, how long to get to a specialist, and that being a core goal. Where's the role of hospitalists in all this over the next, you know, generation? People talk about primary care doctors so much, but don't hospitals have a huge place to play as well and a huge role to play as well in dealing with the supply-demand sort of differences?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's obviously it's my passion because I spent so many years doing it. Obviously, I do think that primary care is extraordinarily important too. And I think what we're learning, and it's kind of become the focus of the second half of my career so far. I'm not that old. I'm 48, so I'm probably about halfway through my full career. But I guess the second quarter of it then, or the last portion of it, has been about this kind of issue of integration of care, of making it seem seamless for the patient. You know, traditionally healthcare, we've been so siloed, all of us in our different areas, and even among physicians, you know, everybody was in their specialty, and the specialties kind of acted separately. And that's, I think, how I kind of came into this, where the role of the hospitalist is really a lot of coordination. If you're doing it right, and this has been my long belief, is that you should be making it feel like for the patient, like they're really seeing a partner in the hospital. That's how I always tried to pitch it. You know, when hospitalist was new, patients didn't quite understand why they weren't seeing their own doctor in the hospital. And the way I would always say it is, I'm your doctor's partner here in the hospital. And if I was doing it well, I was communicating with their office. I was providing all of the benefits of me being there and available with all of the knowledge that the private doctor had of the patient, and also my ability to coordinate all of the various specialists. So there was one person kind of as the captain of the ship. And in reality, as we move to more looking at patients, their overall health, and trying to move from, you know, sick care into health care or into a more population health type of concept, the hospitalist really has this role of trying to be the quarterback, at least for the inpatient side, and also for the transition between that inpatient and outside. I do think transitional care or transitional medicine is really an untapped source and a potential area for growth and for innovation in healthcare. And I think the hospitalists are an important part of that, and an important part of that coordination between the various parts of hospital care, primary care similarly, but the hospitals on the inpatient side.
Thank you. And talk about, as we get to the last part of this year, you've mentioned that the health center has done pretty well economically currently and through COVID for a variety of different reasons, but that's fantastic. What are you most focused on and excited about as we sort of end 2022, start to move into 23? What are the big priorities? What are you most excited about?
You know, I think it's a really interesting time. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. Healthcare is constantly changing. I started in the 90s. And, you know, at that point, the thing was healthcare is changing because of capitation, right? That was the thing then. And then it was a movement towards population health and the ACA. And obviously the last few years it's been COVID, but it's constantly changing. And these times when we have to change are kind of exciting times because it's a time when the rules are kind of thrown out and you can sit there and try to innovate and say, like, what can we do next? And to me, that's always the most interesting thing. And it's how do we come out of this and what do we do with it? You know, where do we turn this negative into an opportunity, right? You know, everything has its positives and its negatives, you know, and it's finding that balance between them, right? You can sit there and say, we're going to make changes, but you can also push that too hard. You know, there's a difference between being a change agent and a chaos agent in a certain way. And I think the fascinating thing right now is figuring out how do we take this hand we've been dealt of a bunch of staff leaving, you know, this great resignation, which is, again, people really just deciding, I now have leverage and I want to choose what's important to me, whether it's salary or work-life balance or whatever it is. Okay, so how do we use that now as an opportunity? We've lost these people. Well, maybe it's an opportunity to figure out how we can be more efficient or how we can do more with less or how we can use technology or AI that we've been talking about for so long. You know, like we talked about telemedicine for years, and then the pandemic happened and suddenly we did it. We've been talking about AI as a potential to make things easier for patients and to coordinate care and to make things simpler for years. Now we kind of have to do it because we don't have the people to do what we used to do. We don't have people to throw at stuff. And to me, that's always what's most exciting. I guess I'm most excited always by the things where it's creation. And so I think what's exciting to me now is how do we invent the new faces of healthcare and what does that look like? I think that there's an opportunity to again, do that kind of transitional care thing I had mentioned earlier where we make healthcare seamless for the patients. How do we address healthcare disparities in new and interesting ways? How do we figure out new partnerships or new niches where we can do targeted partnerships to bring better healthcare to different populations of patients? I think that there's just so many different opportunities right now that's what makes it kind of an exciting time. It's a scary time, but it's also, those are also the exciting times.
Fantastic. And one more question, Dr. Varbro, any advice that you would give to emerging leaders, to physician leaders, and thriving as leaders and doing a great job as leaders, any advice you'd give?
Oh, a few things. I think the first one is always be empathic. Put yourself in other people's positions. You know, when you're in a leadership position, typically you want to change something. And that's scary for people, even if they know it has to happen. And so you really have to put yourself in other people's shoes and understand what they're going through, because I kind of alluded to it earlier. You know, we have a tendency in leadership positions to have this idea of where we want things to go and to just push it really hard. And obviously you want to push things. You don't want to sit on stuff. But when you push it too hard, people's natural reaction is to kind of clench back. I learned that very early on when hospitalist was starting. You know, we came in kind of like a ton of bricks. And it was scary to people. It was really scary to people. I will never forget it. In the early days, I actually got death threats in my first hospitalist job. I had 2 death threats because people were so afraid. They thought that hospitalist was a scheme to steal their patients. And so I think you have to understand that for people and kind of find that kind of right level where you try to affect change or lead, but you do it as fast as you can, but without making people get defensive. And that's hard. I think the other big thing is just always look for that opportunity of where there's something you can do or jump in. As a physician leader, I think a lot of physicians get into leadership and I think it's going to be just the same as being a physician. And it's not, it's a different skill set. There's definitely overlaps, but there's things you can use from the skills you have and learn where to grow them. And also be brutally honest with yourself about where you're not good and try to strengthen yourself there. I'll use a personal example. I'm an internal medicine doctor. So, you know, part of what I do is I try to look at things and figure out, I try to diagnose stuff, right? And so, okay, well, how do I use those skills I built up as a physician for all of those years in a leadership role? Well, maybe I can kind of look and see the stuff that's under the surface of something and use it to identify an issue that I need to address. Like I built up those skills over time. It's different, but it's similar. At the same time, there's skills that I didn't have when I started out. I didn't know, you know, I was a math major in college, so I thought I understood all the financials, but there's subtleties of finance that are not just math, right? So I went out and I picked up those skills. I actually went back and got an MBA at one point. And that was, I think that's something, again, that doesn't mean that all leaders should go out and get an MBA. I think it's more, I was brutally honest and I realized that I had a weakness there. I didn't speak the language to other leaders. And I needed to learn to speak their language because they weren't going to go to medical school and learn to speak mine.
But this concept of recognizing your weaknesses, willing to continue to learn, to never stop learning, are such important parts of leadership too, aren't they? And then I'll just ask you another question. You know, you ended up going to the Yale School of Management. Do you ever look down then upon your Harvard and Princeton colleagues, or are you still nice to them?
I went undergrad to Brown, so I actually always think of myself as a Brown person, even though I spent way more years at Yale, actually, because I worked there for many years too. I'm not one of those snooty Ivy League people. Obviously, I'm working at a safety net hospital, so to me, it has nothing to do with where you went to school or where you trained. It's more what you got out of it. I do think it's just super important to just see where your weaknesses are and just always try to improve yourself and try to learn from other leaders too. I think that's really important. Like, one, find people who are willing to take the time to answer your questions, but also just watch people. I picked up a lot over the years by just watching people who I thought were good leaders and thinking through, like, oh, why did they do that thing? That's not what I would have done. How did that work for them? How did it not work for them? And even people who I thought weren't good leaders, like, why did I think they weren't good leaders? What were they doing that I would avoid? And I think always trying to think that way really helped me personally, at least. And I think it's something that can be generally helpful. Just you have to be honest with yourself about what you're not good at, and then say, okay, how can I get better at that thing? Nobody's ever going to be perfect, but you can always be better. And that's, at the end of the day, I'm never going to be a perfect person, but if I can look myself in the mirror and say I did the best I could do with what I knew and what I had, then, nobody can ask of you more than your best, and you can just always try to make your best better. I guess that's kind of my philosophy.
No, I think that's a fantastic perspective on just this ability stuff. I know it's not easy for a lot of us, but then to work in your weaknesses, work in your strengths, make a contribution. And this concept, it's sort of not where you went to school, but it's what you do afterwards, what you got out of it, what you learned from it, those kinds of things. Far more important than the name brand. Dr. Varbro, I want to thank you so much for joining us in the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. What a remarkable career and guest. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.